Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us. And our guests are Tatiana Bakarova and Jonathan Sibley. And this is Carol Kaufman, the director of the Institute of Coaching. The first thing I'd like to say about Tatiana and John is that we're really proud because they were the very first researchers to be supported by the Institute of Coaching. And we are delighted with what they've done, and they really sort of honor our mission. And our mission is twofold. We want to help coaches be part of the movement that can change the world. One way we want to do this is by really supporting the field of coaching by adding on to everybody's skill set the capacity to translate science and research into really good practice and to be able to articulate what you do, not only from the practice and the spirit of it, but really develop a language of science, because there's a lot of places where that's what will get you in the door. So first, Jonathan, he coaches business leaders. So again, we have two people that are both academics and practitioners, but Jonathan can also coach you in English, French, Spanish, Portuguese, and German. I have mastered those accents, but not any of the languages. So Jonathan, that's beautiful. The other thing in terms of linking Jonathan to evidence-based practice, in addition to his work he'll describe today, he also, I don't know if you guys know about Kagan and Leahy's coaching model, Overcoming Immunity to Change, but Jonathan is certified in that. He comes from a background in business at American Express, where he led lots of teams and technologies, and got his BA from INSEAD and an MSW from Columbia. So, guys, that's Jonathan. Now, Tatiana is also, she's an academic coach and a coaching supervisor, and she's a professor at Oxford Brookes University in the UK, where she supervises, and that they have a doctoral program in coaching and mentoring. She's a teaching fellow. Before that, she was an associate professor of leadership development in Minsk. She's a chartered organizational psychologist. So again, she's sort of been around the block in a number of ways. She's also was my co-editor, and I was her co-editor in chief for the Journal Coaching and International Journal of Research Theory and Practice, which for all of you guys is in the library under journals. And Tatiana and I did that together for the second year. And then she went off to do something else after that. I stayed for one more year, and it's still going strong. But she's also written some great books for you guys to know about that absolutely hit to the heart of good science theory, but translating to practice. She wrote The Complete Handbook of Coaching. She also wrote Coaching and Mentoring Supervision and Developmental Coaching, Working with the Self. And what you can do is, if you guys want to hear about some of those books later, we can send you her bio. So now, turning to the work, Tatiana and Jonathan, we would love for you to share with us your research. And what I want to share with everyone first is what they talk about, and I love, is the whole concept of searching for the active ingredients of coaching. And that's actually what they've done, and we're going to hear about how they did it. And what they do, one frame of it, is one, the interest in science. Second is how it creates a common language and a rigorous language for what we do as coaches, and how to begin talking about that in more sophisticated ways. And it's also good for reflective practice. So it, by having that sort of standardized possibility, detailed of process of coaching, it also allows it to be more teachable and kind of helps the roots of science as well as the kind of wings of the spirit of coaching. So Jonathan and Tatiana, can you just start out with a description of what inspired your research and to tell us a little bit about it?
Okay. Hello, everyone. And it's actually quite exciting to know that we can speak at the same time when you're in so many different sides of the world. And we are also quite happy that you are interested to know about this project. I will start, and I will describe what we was our initial intention and a little bit about how we approach this project, and we'll start talking about the outcomes and the results of it. And Jonathan will continue with more details and with some limitations, and then with the follow-up ideas of what could be done about it. So let's kind of start from the very beginning. When we had that first idea of developing this project, I think in the field, the coaching research was mainly about coaching outcomes, about the effectiveness of coaching, but we were more interested in coaching process. So we wanted to learn what are these active ingredients of coaching, how can we compare different sessions, different styles and traditions of coaching. And we also wanted that to have an instrument that allows us not only qualitatively looked at that, but to measure and to create more credible research. And we also wanted the instrument that we kind of envisaged to be used in coaching training and supervision and in continuing professional development of coaches. So here is the, in your slides, you will see that our research objectives were to develop an instrument that would allow description and measurement of differences and similarities between various approaches in coaching sessions. We also wanted in our project to test this instrument, and in testing this instrument, we hope to see what it could tell us about the nature of coaching process at the level of a coaching session. And we were very lucky to have this help from the Institute of Coaching, and we were able to do this project. So we had to make, in terms of approaching this idea of developing this instrument, we had to make several decisions first, and some of them were quite difficult decisions. Because when we consider the coaching process of one session, we could look at it as an actual session that observers can observe. And then some people, these observers, can use an instrument and try to be as objective as possible about the coaching session. But we also hope to capture the subjectivity of coaches when they simply see from their subjective point of view how the session could look like and explore this variety and this subjectivity of coaching. And in relation to these two decisions, we actually decided to design an instrument that could be used for both purposes. Although in psychotherapy research, they went one or another way. So we probably paid for that decision, and for that reason, Jonathan will probably tell you a little bit more about the some problems that we encounter. But
Tatiana, I have a question. Could you sort of describe in a little bit of an example when you said, just to give people a heads up, when you capture the subjectivity of a session, could you just describe a little bit, maybe with one example, of what that looked like?
Okay. You can imagine that the instrument that we are describing and kind of trying to design at this stage could look of the set of different statements of what is happening in the session. Okay. And if to capture the subjectivity, we would simply could ask the coach to describe their typical session, how they see their session using this instrument. And that would be absolutely subjective because it's not observed from outside. It's only their personal perspective on it. But it's also valuable because if we can look at this their description of the session, we compare their subjective description of their session with another person's subjective description of their session, and we can talk about them and look at these differences and similarities. So that's one. I hope it's okay. Yeah. And then we could the another big decisions we had to make is differently from some research which already exists about the coaching process, like Dehan, for example, with his colleagues, they decided to look at the critical moments of the sessions. But although it's useful and interesting, we thought that we want to see the session as a whole. We want to evaluate with this instrument the session as a whole because it doesn't consist of critical elements only. And another big decision.
Tatiana, why don't you describe, if some people don't know Eric DeHaan's work, about what a critical moment is. I think they intuitively may understand, but why don't you just spell it out a little bit? You look beyond a critical moment.
Yes. Eric DeHaan, with his colleagues in the Ashridge College in the UK, they decided to explore and describe the sessions on the basis of the critical element. What they meant, the critical moment in the session, it's when some people describe them as an aha moment, some people describe them as difficult moments when there is like a rupture of the relationship between the client and the coach. And by description of this critical moment, they added a richness to understanding of what is going on in the relationship between the coach and the client.
Could I jump in for a second?
Yes.
I think, a lot of this comes out of a tradition of research into psychotherapy process and wondering what it is that works and what it is that people do. And similarly, there have been a bunch of approaches to say, do we look at the whole engagement? Do we look at just a session? Do we look at just critical moments in the session? And who defines what a critical moment is? So these are all different lenses for looking at what we do.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. I think it's a useful addition. And the last decision, there is also the tradition of studying the coaching session or behavior of coaches in the coaching session in Germany by Grief and his colleagues. And they explore, they also have an instrument of evaluating what coach actually does in the coaching session. And they break into small elements to see what is effective and what is connected to the good outcomes of the coaching session. But in our instrument, we decided not to focus not only on coach's behavior, but to look at the client and what is happening as a dyad between the coach and the client. Because by definition, coaching is a collaboration, and so we thought it's not enough to only focus on the coach behaviors. So these are these difficult decisions that we made, and now I will briefly describe you the methodology of this process without kind of boring you with too many details.
I'd like to interrupt for a second.
Yes?
The methodology that Tatiana is going to talk about, and a lot of this, in case it's like it's a lot of new information, Jonathan and Tatiana also have a website that you can go on later and actually take the instrument yourself, see all the questions, et cetera. And it is coaching-process.org. That's coaching-process.org, where you can sort of later on go back and really go through this. And I love the fact that you can take it yourself.
Absolutely. But at the moment, if you actually want to look what kind of this process looks like or the set of statements that came up with, in the table one in the addition, in the supplement that was sent to you, in addition to the PowerPoint presentation, it's called the Statements of the Coaching Process Inventory. But I will describe you how we arrived to exactly these 80 statements that are in this table.
I'm sorry, I just have to jump in because I want to manage people's expectations. Carol, you and I should talk at some point after the call because I'm not sure that people can actually still take the assessment without a new agreement with the person who has the website that this directs people to, because he let us run it as a beta test for free. And that experiment ended. So we can talk about how to make that happen if people are interested.
Okay. So back to the methodology. In order to create this instrument, we thought that we are not the only people who can actually who can design that. We wanted to involve as many coaches and experienced coaches as possible, researchers of coaches, trainers and coaches. And what happened, we decided to employ, first of all, it should be the conceptual encounter methodology. What it means, conceptual encounter? It means that the researchers come up with something, and in this case, something was this set of statements that, first of all, we tried to define as three of us, Jonathan, myself, and Adrian Mayes, who was the third person in our team. And we created this list of statements. Then we argued and discussed and quite seriously argued about these statements and came up to the list of statements that we agreed between three of us. Then we took this list of statements to the focus group in the United Kingdom, and they also critiqued our list, added more, changed the definition, changed some statements, and then we amended this list and took it to the next focus group in the States. We had it in New York, and after that to Canada. And by the end of these three focus groups, it was much more refined instrument, much more refined state of statements, including the instructions of how to use it. But after that, we also decided to show or share this list with as many coaches as possible. It was a dedicated website was developed on the research process, and then all coaches had an opportunity to comment on and question any statement from that list. So we had about more than 200 visitors from 26 countries and who left lots of comments, and based on their feedback, we made some additional adjustment and eventually arrived to this list of 80 statements that you see in a table one. And we also created and refined the instructions for two different purposes. And the first purpose is for sessions observed, and the second session is more subjective for sessions that could be imagined, typical sessions. And in order to test this instrument, we also used that website that Jonathan just mentioned, and had to make a decision which way we want to test it, through the actual sessions or through the typical imagined session, and we chose the second way. So we invited, again, as many coaches as possible to participate in this research. They can use it online, and they had to describe their mid-range typical imagine session. And these coaches were from all sorts of, from all different countries. It was 41 participants in from five countries. And they were from different orientations. Some of them called themselves like mixed orientation. Some said that I'm person-centered coaches, some gestalt, brain-based, and all different types of coaches. And we asked them to have to use this instrument. So how that instrument was used? In order for you to see it and imagine how it looked like, you first of all, you have to see those statements. But if you also looked at the slide that called factor array, it will show roughly what each coach actually arrived at, because they have these 80 statements, and they had rank order them from the most characteristics in their session to the least characteristic in their session. And you can see in that picture of the factor array that on the further from the center, the more significant this statement should be. So it's only two statements should be the most characteristic of that sessions, and only two statements the least significant characteristic. And then the numbers go to create that natural distribution line. And because they were forced to do, to make choices and use only a certain number of options in each column, we were able to use the statistical instruments and to compare them and to come to some decision about the patterns emerged. So we used factor analysis and also qualitative feedback from the users. And I hope you are so far with me. Carol, how does it sound?
Okay, I think what we're doing, given that we have to end in 35 minutes, I think we're taking a little bit of a too deep of a dive into the material in from a research perspective, but
I finished with methodology. Sorry. I finished with methodology. Yeah.
Okay, great, because what you wind up is something fantastic in terms of what you discovered about what all these different coaches actually do.
All right. Okay. But now about the results. So when we compared these few sorts of 41 different coaches, and this is an interesting point, because we were hoping that we will find some patterns. For example, there will be groups of coaching who would look at this session and see it very different from the other group of coaches. Let's say Gestalt coaches from the person-centered coaches, or brain-based coaches from the pure executive coaches. And why did we think so? And this would probably I need to remind Carol. Do you remember we put together an editorial in one of this issue of the journals when we argued that the definition of coaching is a quite a difficult issue, and why we can't come up with the definition that everyone agrees? Because there are too many different orientations of coaching. And people just simply don't see coaching in the same way, because they come from different backgrounds, they have different school traditions of coaching. So we argued that, and we're hoping when we would look at this result of this analysis, it will show us these different groups that are significantly different from each other. And apparently it didn't happen, because these 41 Q thoughts were intercorrelated and factor analyzed, and we considered different solutions, but it's only one factor solution was the most solid, which means there was consensus, which means that actually, more or less, all coaches agreed that their coaching session looks quite similar to each other. There are more similarities rather than differences between the way they approach their coaching session.
Well, actually, could I jump in?
Yes,
please do.
So we had 80 different items that people had to choose among in terms of what they felt was most characteristic or least characteristic. One of the first things we did, based on the feedback we got in the UK, was we took out any items that had to do with subject matter of the coaching, because that would make the list far too big. So, you know, clearly there are differences in terms of, do you focus on interpersonal issues, or do you focus on money, or do you focus on, you know, goals or things like that. You can only measure what your instrument allows. We hoped that out of 80 items, there would be enough differences to actually distinguish types of coaching. What we found was that, yes, there are differences between individuals, but not enough that you could categorize. So somebody might differ in terms of one or two items, and somebody else on a different set of one or two items. So the coaches were more similar than they were different based on the tool that we came up with.
Yes, there was actually one coach who was absolutely different from this one common factor, but you can see on the screen what sort of items he actually considered as typical for his session. That coach offers possible solutions, gives advice, interrupts clients, even verbose. So it was very difficult to kind of to put this one coach in groups with others.
So when you think about these results, can you sort of, I mean, it seems what's really exciting to me is that, you know, all these people say, oh, it's ontological coaching or behavioral coaching or analytic coaching. And what you're saying is coaching is what needs to be in the capital letters. And the adjective describing the coaching was in a way less powerful, that there really seems like there is a core set of things coaches do. Can you spell that out? And maybe Jonathan, given our time, you can start sharing.
So it's both what coaches do and what coaches don't do, bearing in mind that at least at this stage of what we know about coaching, there might be one or two items that would distinguish a Gestalt coach, for example, from a psychodynamic coach. But so far it would appear not more than that. So overall, we came up with you know, there's a focus on the client that is about connection and a positive outlook, that it's fluid, that it's collaborative. And because we had a set of items that we wanted to be usable across all sessions of coaching, whether it's a first session or a last session, and whether it's the way you think of a typical session or an actual session somebody might observe, we had a bunch of items like that had to do with referral to an outside specialist or termination of coaching that were not likely to come up in a study like this where we ask people to think about a typical mid-range session. So already we could take out a few of those. Or Tatiana had mentioned we have an item about the coach's verbose. There was only one coach, and this was even unexpected, who would actually volunteer that a typical session is verbose. But if you observe a session, you might actually find out that the coach is talking way too much. So what we found, if you look at the details, is that coaches look at things like new possibilities, help the client to elaborate. They almost always focus on the aim for the session. Also, let me mention that where you might find differences that we scrubbed out of our instrument is in the terminology. One of our goals was to come up with terminology that would be neutral across coaching approaches. So we don't have asks powerful questions, but we have that in with different words that everybody might be able to endorse as something they do or don't do. For example, exploring new possibilities. The coach would look at the underlying mindset of the client, for example, but would be unlikely to encourage the client to feel more deeply. So one of the things that this also does is, especially if you look at the more detailed data, is it starts to help answer the question that we often ask, which is how is coach, not only what is coaching, but how does it differ from some of the neighboring disciplines like consulting or psychotherapy? That often is problematic in terms of what data do we have to support saying this is really different. And it's around things like, and not all therapists would encourage people to feel more deeply, but many would, and most coaches would not. The coach often checks the client's understanding, checks their own understanding of what the client is saying. They explore the client's values. That's something you wouldn't necessarily see in other neighboring fields. In terms of things coaches don't do, according to the coach, they don't follow their own agenda. They tend not to follow a third party's agenda, although that might be interesting if you looked at leadership coaches where there's a sponsoring organization, whether that might need to get teased out more. It's not highly structured. Let's see, I think that in terms of what you would expect to see in an average session, that covers the most important items. What I'd like to do also is leave time for some questions to our audience, if that's okay.
Does this feel like a good time to do that, to pause and get some questions and then respond?
Yeah, I'd like to do both, get questions from people, and also I have some questions that we would like to ask. I'd like to open it up.
Can you unmute us? Sure. And people can unmute themselves by pressing #6, but I will also go ahead and unmute the conference.
The leader has unmuted your line.
And I guess my first question is, I just want to make sure, did people get the documents that were in the links for today's call? Most people have that?
Yes.
For people who are listening to this later, we will have this information in the website. Laurel, are we going to put it in the library, or where will it be?
Yeah, in the library.
Okay, great.
Good thinking. Thank you.
Yeah.
So one of the things you might do while you're thinking of questions and listening to others, if you haven't already, is look at the document that's called, I think, Tables and Figures, and look at the 80 items and just think about, are there things both that surprise you, interest you, that make you think about your own coaching, and things that might be missing, given a quick look at it. So I'd like to hear questions based on what you've heard so far.
There are values between negative 5 and 5 that are assigned to certain of these questions. Can you explain how those values were assigned?
Could you clarify? I'm not sure I understand the question.
I'm looking at the table with the 5 overarching similarities, and then below them are points that are identified sort of to the questions, and they have scores next to them, -5, -4, +4.
Sure. Okay, thank you. So the way this works is, as Tatiana described, it's a forced distribution, so you it goes from +5 to -5. +5 would be most characteristic, in this case, of the coach's imagined session, a typical session of theirs, and -5 would be least characteristic.
As they imagine, not actual.
Right, correct. Exactly. So one of the things that, for future research, one of the questions is, do we all coach the way we think we coach?
Okay.
And one of the things that was found in analogous psychotherapy research was people were much clearer about the way they think they do therapy. You know, I'm a psychodynamic therapist or I'm a CBT therapist. But when you looked at their actual sessions, it didn't follow those prototypes. And so the same might well be with coaches. We might say we're not verbose, heaven forbid, but actually when observed, it turns out we're interrupting our clients all the time. So the +5, if everybody said this item was most characteristic, then the average would have been +5. If coaches are more mixed, it's going to move more towards the middle.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And also, just in terms of how this worked, we originally phrased this as most characteristic and most uncharacteristic while forcing people to have a symmetric distribution. That created a lot of stress for people because they would like to see many more things as characteristic based on how we phrase things.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't feel natural to reverse the phrasing for a number of the items. So it makes more sense just to think in terms of, relatively speaking, most characteristic to less characteristic.
Thank you.
So, Jonathan, I have a question for you.
Sure.
How does having done this change how you coach?
Sure. That's a great question. One of the things, when I go through the list, I think about, is there anything that I'm not doing that I should do more of? Or anything that I am doing that I should do less of? So personally, for example, the idea of exploring values is something that makes a lot of sense intuitively to me, but not something I always do. And so it doesn't mean it's something I should always do, but it means it's something I want to pay attention to. Will tying the client's stated goals to their values, for example, help move them forward? And we know it will in many cases. So it's a reminder that that's something that I might want to reach for in my toolbox more often.
Oh, excellent. Thanks. So what other questions are there for Jonathan and Tatiana?
This is Carol Braddock. I just had an observation on the list of things that came out as most characteristic. That it stands out that it doesn't seem to include anything about next steps or actions that the client is going to take on or practice working on in between sessions. And I wondered if you had any comments on that based on having looked at all the raw data. I don't have the list of statements in front of me, so I don't even know if that was one of the statements.
Well, there is, for example, coach follows up on previous homework. And given a lot of coaching models, you would expect that to be somewhere, I think, towards the top.
Uh-huh.
And yet, as you point out, it was not.
Can I just add a little bit, Jonathan, here?
Please.
Because I think it's in the themes, the focus on the client theme. What we notice is an interesting pattern that the coaches thought that they are mainly want to explore, they are exploring the worldview of the clients rather than trying to speed up the process or to make client more accountable to the process. And that was a feature of that particular theme.
So, I mean, it is interesting because it is something that in some coaching models, if we look specifically at following up on homework, you would expect in a typical session to be, you know, somewhere on the characteristic side. And yet it actually came up in our research with these 41 coaches as very much in the middle and marginally uncharacteristic or less characteristic. So that is interesting. One of the things that, you know, we should mention is, you know, our focus was on coming up with the best instrument possible. And so, you know, the focus groups and the ongoing iterations to come up with the list and putting it out on the internet for people to respond to. We then decided to test it out just to see how it is in the field. But that wasn't the primary focus of our research. So we ended up with these 41 coaches. We know some information about who answered, but that's where there could be a lot more research in terms of looking at a broader range of coaching and coaching schools and making sure people identify how eclectic or single-minded they are in their coaching approach and to see if we can tease out more of these differences.
Hi, this is Dinah Niebuhr. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Yes, you can.
Hi. Just another question. I'm just sort of getting my mind around this, so maybe I'm just clarifying. This instrument's purpose is around comparing different types of coaching and what that subjectively the coach says they do. But it's not about effectiveness of the coaching session. Is that right?
The instrument talks about what happens in the coaching session between the coach and the client. It could very easily be paired with any sort of outcome data, either across an engagement or just some sort of question after the session. Did this feel like a powerful session? And then you could do correlations to see what stands out with more or less effective sessions. But it's not built into the instrument. It's just a tool that could be used for that.
So, for example, a whole bunch of coaches who are all working in one program, and you're trying to sort of compare the impact of all these different coaches, you could do some kind of pairing like you described.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We wanted to come up with a basic instrument that could be used both practically and also for further research. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. Thank you.
And sort of along those lines, I'd be really interested to hear if there are people on the call who do supervision or who teach coaches, if they're thinking of ways they might use this in their actual work with other coaches.
Hello, Jonathan?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi, my name's Rob Smale. I'm here in South Africa, and I run a supervision practice where I work with coaches from many different schools of coaching. And as I was going through the inventory, I'm going, yes, this would be really useful in terms of shared understanding of what's going on. But there's a bit of me, and I'm wondering, when you mention, you know, its application to supervision, what were your thoughts?
Well, I mean, we didn't design it specifically for supervision.
Oh, can I get some idea?
Well, actually, yeah, Tatiana is very involved in supervision, so let me let her answer.
You can imagine that because normally the client, this coach, comes to supervision and bring the case, and it's always for supervisor the second hand description of the case, and to make it more visual even or more tangible, the coach can actually use this instrument to describe this session and bring it to the supervisor to discuss together. Or they can let this session, a description of the session, available to the supervisors to do their evaluation and compare their perspectives. Mm. How does it sound?
Yeah, because I'm just thinking with coaches from many schools, often one of the things we're working through in supervision is around what is the same and what is different. And by using this as maybe a card sort, as they're thinking about or talking about cases, we may be able to track the similarity. So we move beyond the jargon and start
working
with what's going on from a practitioner perspective.
That would be our hope. And and actually, you know, you could use it formally in terms of a card sort with actual cards or online with the supervisor and the coach doing their own versions to see what strikes them as most and least characteristic, or informally just in terms of looking for what would be on the polls without going through the whole process, which can take, you know, 45 minutes or so. Some people have also brought up the possibility of asking the coachee, you know, to do a sort and see if they would see it differently in terms of what seems characteristic or uncharacteristic.
And I think that would be useful where the supervision is being run within organizations. So where I'm working with coaches in a specific organization and therefore can have access. I'm quite excited by what you've developed. And I'm actually thinking around how I take it forward. So thank you.
You know, Jonathan, one thing I like in looking at them, I'm wondering if any of you who are listening feel the same way, is also, you know, I supervise about 25 executive coaches, and I could see using it for that. But what excites me the most, given that I find my work incredibly interesting, is to go through here as a checklist for myself after a session to help kind of with self-reflective process. You know, did I explore, you know, what did I do, what did I not do in any particular session to kind of just go, oh, that's interesting, I didn't realize I did that, you know. So I could see it as to help self-reflective practice as well as supervision.
And if anybody ever has the luxury of taping themselves for self-supervision, going through, and not just based on the filter of your memory of what you did and didn't do, but actually as you watch yourself, I think that can add an extra piece.
I think that it would be interesting to show this list of questions to a client and find out what they value most.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Absolutely. Can I just share very briefly the research that is done by Adrian Mays, who is part of our team, and he actually done exactly that. So he looked at 6 sessions, and he asked clients and coaches and several observers to look at each of the session using this instrument as well as the interview. And what as interesting came up with this research, that all clients apparently were very happy with coaching sessions. All coaches were describing the session in a very different way according to the tradition they came from. But what was quite disturbing, that all supervisors practically tear all the sessions apart. So they were so critical. It was incredibly difficult to even to look at that in comparison to the effect that it had on clients.
So let me add another piece to that. In the psychotherapy process research, and even just in anecdotal writings, therapists will say, this was a fantastic session. I think there was a real breakthrough. And the client will feel like nothing particularly happened. And when you look at diaries, for example, the client will talk about a fantastic session where they learned so much, and the therapist will be completely oblivious to that. So it would make sense that that could happen in coaching as well. So, and then when you add in the third person as the observer, whether they're a supervisor or just an independent observer, everybody, it's sort of like the blind man and the elephant. Everybody might have a completely different idea of what's going on.
And it also has quite serious implications, because if it looks like that observers can see completely different things from what clients or coaches see, how do we, for example, assess coaches in the professional bodies? How do we evaluate their work? And this is, and whose opinion is more important, the clients or the observers? It's all interesting questions.
Yeah, Jonathan, Yvon Chouinard in Montreal. Just going back to your question about supervision, you know, most of the supervision I do is for credentialing purposes for the ICF, and maybe that would be interesting just to parallel, you know, all the statements to the core coaching skills of ICF as a checklist, you know, to see whether the coachee is the coach is actually following the coach, you know, skills that ICF promotes.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if this isn't just a more granular version of what is, you know, more fine-toothed than the ICF competencies, but it would be interesting for somebody to actually go through and look.
Yeah.
I think in this instrument we try to use some could be called negative descriptions. I guess it wouldn't be in the competencies list, because we wanted to have a kind of wider perspective of what is happening in the session. But they, I can see how it could be still utilized in comparison.
Other questions? I mean, as we talk about this, as you look at it, does anything strike you in terms of this isn't the way I think of coaching, or this isn't the way I coach, or gee, I wish I did more of this?
I think for me it was very interesting. Do you hear me? This is Tania from Germany.
Yes.
Yes, thanks.
Yes, I think it was very interesting seeing the outcome and the statements, and seeing that actually it doesn't matter so much what kind of coach you are, but it's very similar the way you're working. But for me, there's a question what also Tatiana was saying before, what Adrian was doing in his research when he looked at the client, at the coach, and the supervision, that it's coming from my area. It's really the style of communication you use, if you can, with the emotional intelligence, if you can touch the person's way of style, and if you have a supervision, it might have a different way of understanding things because of the style of communication. He likes this kind of more than the other one, and then there is the client. And I think that maybe is a very, it's a soft skill part, which I think is very difficult, and for me very difficult also to address always on one side the client, and on the other side the supervision, the human resource management, who's deciding on who's getting what kind of coach or training programs.
Yeah, you know, if I understand correctly, I think if we look again at sort of a neighboring discipline, at psychotherapy, there's been so much research about the importance of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's much more about things like the relationship and hope than it is about technique. And why wouldn't it be the same for coaching? And so one of the top items is there appears to be rapport or strong connection between the client and coach. And another one is the coach shows empathy. So yeah, as you point out, I think the question is, how do you measure that, and how do you increase awareness of that, and how do you teach that?
Exactly, because you have to understand what kind of different people are there, what kind of different communication styles are there, what kind of different cultures are there. cultures of the company, cultures of the people and background. So it's, yeah, it's very complex, but it's very, very helpful what you wrote down, and to see that there are so many similarities also coming out of these research, and feeling that other coaches are actually doing it with a kind of same technique.
Yes, this is Carol. That was the most exciting to me. You know, you meet so many people to go, you know, there really is a core body of what we are doing as coaches. And I just sort of feel like this work really is very, on one hand, it takes the research field forward, but as a practitioner, I find it very sort of comforting and a little more ground to stand on when people say, well, what's coaching anyway? To say, well, there really is this body of unique skills that we do, and research supports that this is what, you know, coaches provide. And I really appreciate, Tatiana and Jonathan, your leading us forward that way. Now, we have 4 minutes left. So, Tatiana and Jonathan, if it's all right with you, I'd love to give you a couple minutes apiece for your last word before we say goodbye for today.
I probably would like to give that what you are just saying, that sort of extended definition of coaching, that probably would, I agree, that also excites me, mainly what the coaches have in common and how it looks. If you don't mind, I can actually remind you that in a typical session, coaches see themselves as working to explore and understand the worldview and goals of the client more than just speeding process or holding the client accountable. And the coach tries to help the client to identify new possibility and to find the resources to do so. And the worldview of clients is given primary importance rather than perspective of others. The session is a fluid with an atmosphere of warmth and optimism, and the role of the coach could be best conceptualized as a collaborative explorer rather than informed expert. And that's what I would see as a sort of extended definition of coaching.
That's beautiful, Tatiana. I'd like to have that transcribed exactly. Thank you.
We can
Jonathan, your last word.
Yeah, what we've tried to do is come up with something which is at an appropriate level of detail where it's not completely overwhelming and it's not full of jargon, but it hasn't been so sanitized that it's useless. Our hope is that as people use it either formally or informally for research or practice, that it evolves and we learn, you know, are there other items that need to be added? Are there things which are not that useful? Do things need to be reworded? So I would love for people to be able to use it or at least think about it and give feedback. You know, so please contact us with any sort of questions or feedback and let us know if it's useful or what would make it more useful.
For those of you who are not sure how to contact them, if you write to info@instituteofcoaching.org, we will forward them to Jonathan and Tatiana. So I'd just really
Can I just say one more thing really quickly?
Yes, you may.
Which is, I just want to highlight that this initial research was based on how people say and think they coach, as opposed to looking at how people actually coach. So in terms of a definition of coaching, this is what we think we do or say we do.
Yes.
And hopefully it's what we do because it sounds pretty good. But that's the next wave of research.
Yes, that'll be wonderful to have people look at coaching videos and really see what are the coaches doing. And I will be excited for that next week, that next wave of research. And it's so applicable to practice. So everybody, thank you very much for being here and joining us. We hope this has been helpful. Again, this will be taped and put on the website. The materials will be put on the website. And if you want to reach Jonathan or Tatiana, you can Google them and find them, but you can also write them through info@instituteofcoaching.org. So thank you, everybody. Thank you very, very much, and goodbye for now.